Part 2. The Work.
There is, in fact, no such thing as a note in music. A note is an abstract symbol representing a tone. Each vibratory event is unique. There are four levels of vibration coexistent in music. The middle levels involve pitch and rhythm. The micro level is a subtle vibration that modifies and varies the pitches and rhythm, like vibratos, rubatos, hesitations, surgings, etc., and their personal expressiveness in the individual player. The macro level is the overall form and structure. When we are flexible and sensitive, we're always sliding into bass, into a continuous dance of feedback. Our muscles can't respond to feedback unless the fingers are soft and relaxed. The Weber-Fechner law of psychophysics relates the objective value of stimulation to its subjective value. Our sensitivity diminishes in proportion to the total amount of stimulation. If there is less total stimulation, each small change makes more of a difference. Against a background that is quiet and stress-free, subtle sounds and movements can have a very dramatic effect. The louder we play, the less we hear. The more relaxed and ready the muscles are, the more different ways they can move. If you try to play, you fail. If you force to play, you crush it. If you race, you trip. Anytime you stiffen or brace yourself against some error or problem, the very act of bracing will cause the problem to occur. The only road to strength is vulnerability. Concentrating on the body, gravity, balance, technique, the physicality of the instrument leaves room for inspiration to sneak in unimpeded. From this empty space, all your subsequent adventures may flow in improvisation. The right and left hands are like a matched pair, like male and female, like music and silence. The instrument embraces past, present, and future. If the right and left hand forget each other, the best way to get them back into love is to re-enter that subtle awareness that is attained by playing very, very softly and listening. Practice. We learn only by doing. Our stereotypical formula, practice makes perfect, carries with it some subtle and serious problems. We think of practice as an activity done in a special context to prepare for performance or, quote, the real thing. But if we split practice from the real thing, neither one of them will be very real. The most frustrating, agonizing part of the creative work is our encounter with the gap between what we feel and what we can express. We can look at ourselves and feel that everything is lacking. And it is in this gap where we feel most deeply, but are most inarticulate. Technique can bridge this gap. It can also widen it. When we see the technique or skill as something to be attained, we again fall into the dichotomy of practicing and perfect. Technique can get too solid. We can become so used to knowing how it should be done that we can become distant from the freshness of today's situation. Competence that loses a sense of its roots in the playful spirit becomes ensconced in rigid forms of professionalism. The Western idea of practice is to acquire a skill related to our work ethic, which enjoins us to endure a struggle or boredom now in return for some future reward. The Eastern idea of practice is to actualize or reveal the complete person who is already there. This is not practice for something, but complete practice which suffices unto itself. No matter how expert we may become, we need to continually relearn how to play with a beginner's mind, breath, and body. Not only is practice necessary to art, it is art. If you find yourself practicing boring, if you find the practice boring, don't run away from it. Don't tolerate it either. Transform it into something that suits you. In any art, we can take the most basic and simple technique and shift it around and personalize it until it becomes something that engages us. The exercise of technique is not boring or interesting in and of itself. It is we who manufacture the boredom. boredom, fascination, play, drudgery, high drama, seduction. These are all names of contexts that we place on what we do and how we perceive it. Improvisation can have the same satisfying sense of structure and wholeness as planned compositions. When we try and throw them away, we can try things and throw them away as many times as necessary. Brahms once remarked that the mark of an artist is how much he throws away. You can engage in things like automatic writing, brainstorming, free association, automatic drawing. Invent some channel of flow from heart to reality and a way of recording it so that at a later time in another mood you can judge the work and correct it. Practice this totally judgment-free, discrimination-free pouring out of the heart. The childish, repetitive, sing-song iteration of seeming nonsense is pay dirt from which creative work is mined and refined. For the artist, this is one of the most delicate balancing acts. On the one hand, it's very dangerous to separate practice from the real thing. On the other hand, if we start judging what we do, we will not have the safe space in which to experiment. Practice gives the creative process a steady momentum so that when the imaginative surprises occur, they can be incorporated into the growing, breathing organism of our imagination. Here we perform the most essential synthesis, stretching out the moments of inspiration into a continuous flow of doing. Inspirations are no longer mere flashes of insight. In practice, the perspiration becomes in and of itself inspiring. Mastery comes from practice. Practice comes from playful, compulsive experimentation. In practice, work is play, intrinsically rewarding. To create, we need both technique and freedom from technique. To this end, we practice until our skills become unconscious. When skill reaches a certain level, it hides itself. When skill hides itself in the unconscious, it reveals the unconscious. Technique is the vehicle for surfacing normally unconscious material into the dream world and myth world, to where they become visible, nameable, and singable. Practice that involves samadhi states is often characterized by ritual. Much of the effectiveness of practice resides in the preparation to do so. The specific preparations begin when you enter temenos. In ancient Greek thought, the temenos is a magic circle, a delimited sacred space within which special rules apply and in which extraordinary events are free to occur. To prepare the temenos, clean and clear the body and mind. Let heat and momentum arise as natural reverberation from the stillness. When the demons of confusion and the sense of being overwhelmed strike, they can sometimes be cleared out by clearing the space. Let the sessions flow through its three natural phases: invocation, work, and gratitude. The opening ritual is pleasurable in and of itself. Rituals and preparations function to discharge and clear obstructions and nervous doubts, to invoke our muses, however we may conceive them, to open our capacities of mediumship and concentration, and to stabilize our person for the challenges ahead. In this intensified, turned up state, creativity becomes everything we do and perceive. The power of limits. Both assimilating the outside pattern to desires and accommodating oneself to the outside pattern is the eternal dialogue between making and sensing. The process of making artwork is one in which the artist uses his training, style, habits, personality, which might be very graceful and interesting, but are nevertheless somehow set and predictable, to match the patterning outside himself with patternings he brings within his own organism, or the crossing or marriaging of the two patterns in something that has never been seen before, which is nevertheless an outgrowth of the artist's original nature. A moire, a crossing or marriage of two patterns, becomes a third pattern and has a life of its own. We use the limits of the body of the instrument of conventional forms and of new forms that we ourselves invent, as well as the limits created by our collaboration, the audience, the place in which we play, and the resources available to us. The limits provide us something to work with and against. The voice of the muse comes to realization in and through the limits of the body. We're influenced by the shape of our hands, the way they move, their resistances. The shape and size of human hand brings powerful but subtle laws into every kind of art, craftsmanship, mechanical work, and into our ideas and feelings as well. The hand surprises us, creates and solves problems on its own. Other rules are the rules of form, conventional or unconventional, that we voluntarily choose to follow. Structure ignites spontaneity. Rules may simply present a definite situation that can provoke a definite, if unpredictable, reaction from the artist. Two rules are more than enough. If we have a rule concerning harmony and another concerning rhythm, if we have a rule concerning mood and another concerning the use of silence, we don't need any more. Limits yield intensity. Stravinsky said, the more constraint one imposes, the more one frees oneself from the chains that shackle the spirit, the arbitrariness that serves only to obtain the precision of execution. If form is mechanically applied, it may indeed result in a work that is conventional, if not pedantic or even stupid. But form used well can become the very vehicle of freedom, of discovering the creative surprises that liberate mind at play. The poet Wendell Berry writes, "Form serves us best when it works as an obstruction to baffle us and deflect our intended course. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings." With one dimension constrained, play becomes freer in other dimensions. In a confined play space, play may become richer and subtler. One may play subtly, yielding a wide dynamic range between softest and loudest. The French word bricolage, which means making do with the material at hand, implies what mathematicians like to call elegance, which is the economy of statement that a single line of thought has a great many implications and outcomes. In bricolage, we take the ordinary materials in our hands and turn them into living matter. The fulcrum of transformation is the mind at play, having nothing to gain and nothing to lose, working and playing around with the limits and resistances of the tools we hold in our hands. The artistic attitude, which involves a healthy dose of bricolage, frees us to see the possibilities before us, and then we can take ordinary instruments and make them extraordinary. The power of mistakes. Mistakes are of incalculable value to us. There is first the value of mistakes as the raw material of learning. Good judgment comes from experience. Experience comes from bad judgment. Mistakes present us with unforeseen opportunities. The history of science, as we all know, is liberally peppered with stories of essential discoveries seeded by mistakes and accidents. Time after time, quirks and mishaps that were attempted to be rejected as bad data are often the best. The power of mistakes enables us to reframe creative blocks and turn them around. Mindfulness, practice, and creativity in life are not to be reserved for a time and place where everything is perfect. Playing together. The beauty of playing together is meeting in the one. We listen to each other, we mirror each other, we connect with what we hear. What comes is a revelation to both of us. There is a third, totally new style that pulls on us. It is as though we have become a group organism that has its own nature and its own way of being. From a unique and unpredictable place, which is the group personality or group brain. Each collaboration brings to the work a different set of strengths and resistances. We provide both irritation and inspiration for each other.
There is no one idea of creativity that can describe it all. Therefore, in collaborating with others, we round up, as in any relationship, an enlarged self, a more versatile creativity. This brings us back to the law of requisite variety. By crossing one identity with another, we multiply the variety of the total system, and at the same time, each identity serves as both a check on the other and a spur to the development of the total system. Learning becomes many-sided, a refreshing and vitalizing force. We join in community with others and respond to each other thanks to the power of listening, watching, and sensing. In playing together, there is a real risk of cacophony, the antidote to which is discipline. Mutual awareness, consideration, listening, and willingness to be subtle is the discipline. Giving up some control to another person teaches us to give up some control to the unconscious. We are now seeing a renaissance of crossover art of all sorts. East meets West, popular meets classical, improvisation meets tightly scored composition. Whole cultures can play together, contribute to each other, and fertilize each other. Group improvisation can be a catalyst to powerful and unique friendships. Entrainment is the synchronization of two or more rhythmic systems into a single pulse. When improvisers play together, they rely on this natural phenomenon to mesh the music so that they breathe together, pulse together, and think together. Not locked in exactly, it's finding each other again and again in micro moments of time. Perfect harmony can be ecstasy or an utter bore. It is the push and pull that makes it exciting. Through subtle but powerful entrainments, the audience, the environment, and the players link into a self-organizing whole. The performers, audience, instruments in the room, the night outside, the space, all become one being pulsing. Form unfoldment. A musical improvisation can dynamically structure itself. The selections we have made affect the selections we will make. A musical form that illustrates this process is the reverse theme and variations, as in many of Sibelius's symphonies or in Keith Jarrett's Cone Concert. A major secret of aesthetics is the mobilization of this ever-moving dialogue and the delicate balance it sets up between premonitions confirmed and premonitions overturned. The listener models the sound as she hears it and then compares the next piece of this melody to see how it matches and differs from the model. As in the 20 questions game, we start at the edge and work our way around and round into the center. Similarly, great moments in science occur when the seeming complexity of the universe is suddenly resolved by seeing an underlying design or motif that explains things more deeply. Surprises, mistakes, accidents, anomalies, and mysteries pop up to baffle us and fertilize the minefield. These lead to new rounds of discoveries which create the next phase of complexity which awaits new synthesis. Artful composition makes surprises and shifts of direction seem inevitable to us, or makes the inevitable surprising. The best art is that which does not present itself on a silver platter, but rouses the reader's faculties to act. The key to either improvising or composing is to make each moment so tantalizing that it inexorably leads us on to the next. We love to be seduced by a delayed inevitability. Feelings of suspense in a more traditional sonata form, for example, are first stated, then elaborated, then ornamented, and then turned around and upside down. Polyphonic forms like fugues and canons give one the feeling of universes that nevertheless merge or resolve into one. Feeling of parallel universes that nevertheless merge or resolve into one. We experience a sense of satisfaction when closure finally hits, often accompanied by bodily signs of being moved, like laughter or tears. The muse presents raw bursts of inspiration, flashes, and improvisatory moments in which the art just flows out. but she also presents the technical, organizational job of taking what we have generated and then filing and fitting and playing with the pieces until they line up. This is a whole art unto itself, of an art of vision and revision. Editing must come from the same inspired joy and abandon as free improvisation. Some key elements of artistic editing are: 1. Deep feeling for the intentions beneath the surface. 2. Sensual love of the language. 3. Sense of elegance. 4. Ruthlessness. The first three can perhaps be summarized under the category of good taste, which involves sensation, sense of balance, and knowledge of the medium, leavened with appropriate sense of outrageousness. And ruthlessness is necessary to keep the artwork clear and simple, even though there is a gigantic difference between simplicity and insipidity. Rather, the simple formulation of our vision may be far from easy. It may be challenging, disturbing, and demand a great deal of work. By manipulating and massaging form, we perform a sympathetic magic on the spiritual sides of our work, on the spiritual insides of our work. The form refines the feeling. It is one of the most delightful aspects of art making, when the feeling and the form have come into a state of harmony. Fitting the feeling together with the form elicits aspects of the feeling that you would never have thought of had you not expressed it in any form at all.